The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Because he can't make a case, no kidding. He's backed into a corner with racist twitting and playing to his base,
base, base.
Yeah, it's pretty clear Trump ain't no genius, but he can throw a tantrum just like a teeny wuss. He heard from Fox News he shouldn't sign a deal, and all the right-wingers hurt his poor feelings. I see the media trying that both sides law, but after all this time, you'd think that crap would stop. If you've got working brain cells, it's plain to see that Trump said he would own the shutdown. We all saw it on TV. Yeah, the real border crisis is totally self-imposed. Trump created the problem by trying to make the border closed. If you would fact check, he is tweeting into a drinking game. You will be plastered before he's done trying to spell his name. Because he's simply playing to his base in their bubble. If he upsets his base, then his base makes trouble. The lies he tells his base nowadays go double. He's playing to his base.
Oi!
Let's bring reality back. Now we're hearing the wall was just a way to make Trump remember to bash immigrants and then insist that Mexico would pay. Yeah, the White House insisted we all ought to be afraid of an immigrant caravan that needed a blockade. Whether it's concrete or steel or a curtain or a metaphor, most of the country's not buying the wall nonsense anymore. And though Trump's clearly playing to his base, it's shrinking. The GOP support will erase. It's already sinking before they're voted out in disgrace. Hope they're thinking, stop playing to this base, racist base, 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 base.
Okay, Lauren Mayer getting things started for us on this Wednesday. Lauren Mayer's comedy songs, she just is brilliant. That was another great one. I know what it was from. It's all about that bass by a woman named Meghan Trainor. Not my kind of music. So I don't think I've ever heard the original song, but it was still good. Lauren Mayer does just incredible work. And it's I'm thrilled that she gives us her videos to play on the show, because we could all use a little bit of laughter every now and then. I got to start by apologizing for my mood yesterday. I'm sort of under the weather. But it again was a mental thing yesterday. I got to tell you what happened. You know, I've been doing this show here online for 9 years. It'll be 10 years next year. Next year will be the 10th anniversary of when Air America Radio went off the air. And I had been working there. I'd been doing the 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. show for almost the last year of Air America's existence. And the day that the network went under, filed bankruptcy, went off the air, I was, you know, I was like recording interviews to air that, because it was hard to get guests on late that late at night. And so that night I just moved my show online and never looked back. And now we're coming up on 10 years. But a couple of things, and you know, because I'm always honest with you. One is, it's really hard to make a living the way I'm doing this. It's hard to make a living no matter what, doing, you know, a podcast or an online radio show without a infrastructure behind you. There's a lot of now sort of networks that have taken over, and I love the Progressive Voices Network. They give me a great outlet, and it's how I get to most of the people listening, and I appreciate it. But it's not a money-making venture. I mean, they're having a hard time covering the bandwidth costs. That's why you hear those fundraising ads on the air all the time. So even if I put the show behind a paywall and, you know, charged a fixed amount each month for the podcast, I'd wind up losing a lot of listeners, I think, because I know a lot of you are in the same situation I'm in, which is it's tough to make ends meet at the end of the month. And that's why when I moved online, I made a concerted effort. I said, I'm not going to put the show behind a paywall. I'm going to use like the public broadcasting model without those interminable pledge drives, just an occasional reminder that the show is listener supported and we could use your help. Regardless of which way I decided to do it, on the honor system or you know, putting it behind a paywall, it would still be difficult to make ends meet. That plus, honestly, the state of our world right now is super depressing. And although I've been doing a little better, I'm still not doing great. And, you know, my radio career started in music radio many years ago. And so I noticed there was a local radio station who had, this is a few months ago, had an opening, a classic rock station. So I applied, couldn't even get a call back. And I'm someone not to toot my own horn or anything, but I've been doing that, been in radio for 40 years. January of 1979 was when I started. Seriously. I was in college. That's when I got my radio telephone operator permit, which isn't even necessary anymore. So this month marks my 40th year in radio. I've held just about every job on the programming side of a radio station, on the air, behind the scenes. The only thing I haven't done is sales because I don't like asking people for money. Anyway, I applied for this job, couldn't even get a phone call back. It was like it took me badgering the program director via email to say, hello, did you get my stuff? And he's like, yeah, we already have someone in mind. Great. Thanks for letting me know. So again, last week, actually over the holidays, I saw another job posting at this same radio station for an executive producer for a morning show. Well, I could do that shit with my hands tied behind my back and my eyes closed. I've had great success. I produced the Jim Kerr and the Morning Crew at WPLJ in New York when I was younger, taking that show into first place. We beat Scott Shannon, who ruled the city at Z100. That was a big fucking deal. Then I moved out to Los Angeles and worked with Mark and Brian and took them to first place, beating Rick Dees. So I've produced and others. I worked with Phil Hendry. I've worked with some of the biggest names, and I've hosted my own morning shows. I'm not saying that because of this I deserved the job, but at least an acknowledgement, a phone call, an email back or something. So I was feeling a little sorry for myself yesterday and actually wrote a post on Facebook saying I've been in this business for 40 years and can't get a return phone call. And what blew my mind is there's about 100 responses to my comment with people from people who I've known throughout the years, people with much bigger careers than mine on both the record industry side and the radio side, who are all around the same age. And shocker, they're having the same issues. So here's my question. If I, as a professional at 59 years old, not only can't get a job, can't even get a return phone call, how am I supposed to live until Social Security kicks in and Medicare? And again, it's not only about me, although it is. It's about everyone my age. And if you go on my Facebook page, my Facebook account is N Sandler. It's public. So even if you can't accept a friend request, you can follow And you can post it. It's just an open page because, you know, I use it for work. And but go through and read the thread. Read what some of the people said. First of all, there's some wonderful compliments that made me feel very good. But on top of that, all these people who I've known for decades who are pros in their field who, again, forget about getting the job. They can't even get an acknowledgement that they're searching, that they've, you know, put forth an inquiry, that they've applied for a job. And I find that unconscionable. You know, I've been a program director. I've hired air staffs. I've coached people on the air. And having been in this position before, though not to this extent, I know what it's like to apply for a job and then hear nothing. So I always made it a point to write back to someone, even if it's to say, we already have someone in mind, but I'll keep your stuff, just to acknowledge their existence. I got to tell you, very disconcerting. The good news is, I guess this little post on Facebook has taken on a life of its own because I've been contacted by a couple of media outlets. You know, we're trade publication, so the general public won't see it, but they want to do an interview to find out what it's about. Again, do I expect a paying job to come out of it? Hell no. I just wish if I have to do this, and again, once I get into it, I'm fine. It's preparing for it every day. And just hating the fact that Donald Trump is the fucking president of the United States. How did we get here? A couple of things before we get to the news today. Nancy Pelosi, I have my issues with her, but she is one tough woman. So this morning, she sent a letter to Donald Trump, basically asking him to move the day of the State of the Union address or deliver it in writing the way they used to do it. She cited security concerns from the ongoing government shutdown. Now, Donald Trump just believes in, you know, making people work and not paying them. He's done it throughout his entire adult professional, such as it is, life. And he's doing it while he's in the White House. They're recalling some like 50,000 furloughed workers saying, we need you. You need to come into work, but you're still not going to get paid. Until maybe after the strike is over. I don't know. There are just days I just think it's not worth it. And yeah, that I desire to go work on a silly morning show where I don't have to think about this stuff. But it is what it is. So that's why I've been in this mood. Anyway, lots of news going on. And we start across the pond. In fact, let's get Dennis Campbell on the line because I heard from him, I don't know, a few days ago, and he said the Brexit vote is gonna take place on Tuesday. Should we talk on Wednesday? I said, absolutely. So Dennis Campbell, you should know by now, is the publisher of UK Progressive magazine. You can find them at ukprogressive.co.uk. He's also one of the co-hosts of the Three Muckrakers podcast, a very good podcast that you should check out. Again, it's because there are so many starting every day. It's, you know, we get lost in the shuffle sometimes. So I like to promote the good ones. Anyway, Dennis Campbell, you there?
I am here. We just recorded episode 190, and I'm here a proud 61-year-old that also cannot find a job. So it's a good club. We have jackets.
I didn't get my jacket. I sold it. I live in Florida. You know, I only have to bundle up a couple of days a year. So whatever. I never considered myself old until now. And I know I'm not old, but in terms of, you know, being in the job market, there's a whole bunch of us.
The problem is, Nicole, is we're dealing with 20 and 30 year olds that have absolutely no clue what they're doing. And they seem to think that their job is to just move a resume from, you know, pile A to pile B without taking a look at what it's all about. I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah. No, I know. And somebody in the chat room who's not logged in said it's supposed to be against the law, but age discrimination for sure is a thing. Here's the thing, because I looked it up because I know enough about hiring people that when you have qualified applicants, there is a requirement that you talk to them. And the fact that I don't even get a call back, I find, you know, sort of disconcerting. It's not a strike. It's a shut. Did I say it's a strike? Oh, okay. Government shutdown. Just because my brain is fried right now. Anyway, I know it's a shutdown.
So's mine after 2 days of Brexit.
I'll bet. I'll bet. But I looked into it. You can't like sue a company for not hiring you. So,
no,
you know, it is what it is. I'm just going to keep calling it out as I see it. That's all I can do. Anyway, the more important things, not for a couple of individuals, but for, in your case, an entire nation. So the Brexit vote happened yesterday. And not only did it go down, it went down hard. The vote was 325 to 306. That's too close for comfort, right?
Well, you know, she actually had 100 of her own party members. You know, I've been calling this for the last several months the Tory mutiny, because all the people that brought Brexit and foisted it upon us have all left the sinking ship. And now they're sitting back and saying, oh, I didn't do anything for this. But they're the ones that caused all of this with the lies and the deceit. And it lost by 230 votes last night.
That's amazing. So then so it loses. And then the next thing is, it was the no confidence vote on Theresa May automatically triggered, or that's something that Jeremy Corbyn did?
Well, literally, at the moment the vote was read, and you know, the speaker recognized Corbyn, who had already tabled and was ready to roll with his motion of no confidence in a bill. And it was a simple one-line bill: does the House have confidence in Her Majesty's government? And a no vote meant, believe it or not, that you had confidence, and a yes vote meant that you know, you were voting her out. It was a fascinating day of theater here. It kicked off about 7 a.m. your time, noontime, our time, with an extended prime minister's question because of something called the 10-minute rule, which has to happen between 10 minutes to 1 and 1 when the motion for no confidence, the bill, is formally presented to the House. And then both Prime Minister May and Jeremy Corbyn made very long-winded speeches at which they were interrupted by members of their own parties. And it was, you know, quite theatrical. And then, of course, around about 1:45, most people turned the telly off because it was just a series, just like in your U.S. House of Representatives, of members standing up before the microphone to give their 5 or 10 minute speeches and get their moment of fame.
Sure.
And then it finally culminated at 7 p.m. when they called the question. It's an interesting process. If you've never seen it, it's fun to watch every now and then. You can probably see it on C-SPAN, or if you're interested in The Guardian, you know, the speaker basically says, as when they call the question, the ayes and the nays, and he can't make a decision, he says, "Empty the lobby!" And literally everybody heads for the door. And they literally head for one of two lobbies that are just outside of the House, and one of them is the no lobby and one of them is the yes lobby.
So that's the way you register your vote? Do you go stand in the proper lobby?
They have two tellers that sit there at a table.
Wow.
They register their vote. It gets counted and put in, and it's all done manually. And then they come together with their totals, and they walk into the House, all four of them. There's two tellers for the yeses and two for the no. They walk in. You know, and the, before he says, lock the doors, because, you know, this is supposedly now done in secret. And the four of them walk forward, and the head teller says, the ayes are 206, the nays are 200, and I think it was 30 something. You know, the ayes have it. And then they hand a piece of paper to the speaker, who repeats the same thing. And then at the end of that, he says, unlock the doors so they can now leave. It's really quite theatrical, but it is the tradition of the House. But she barely won. She won by 19 after having lost by 230 the night before. And so the next thing is, what do we do? What do we do now? I mean, Macron was brilliant today.
So what did he say?
He addressed a group in France, in French. And he basically – he summed it up better than anybody has been able to do so far. He said, we basically – the Brits basically have three options. The first is no deal. They say there's no agreement. It scares everybody. But the losers are the British people, because in this context, they'll have to, without any transition period, renegotiate a future relationship. And I can tell you very solemnly that in the framework of this relationship, the interests of French fishing will be defended. We'll have to negotiate with them. They can't afford, because of this trend, without a transition period, they can't afford to have a plane take off or land in their country. 70% of their supermarket supplies come from continental Europe. It's basically a disaster. He didn't say that last part.
Uh-huh.
Or, secondly, they'll tell us, we will try. And he says, I think that's what they'll do. I know them. I'm even going to take bets on it. We'll try to improve what we can obtain from the Europeans. We'll vote again. In that case, we'll look into it. But I have doubts because we reached our limits with the deal we just made. And we won't, and this is the most brilliant line of all, just solve Britain's domestic political issues and stop defending Europe's issues.
Hey, Dennis Campbell, let me ask you this. And it's a question from the chat room. Is Brexit basically the UK's version of the wall?
In some respects, yes. I mean, this was something that was – we have to go all the way back to 2016, the summer of 2016 in June, mm-hmm. when a very simple referendum question was put before the British people. Shall we remain in the European Union? Yes or no?
Mm-hmm.
And the no's won 51.9 to 40 – whatever it is.
Right.
I was never
close.
Good at math. 48.1.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. It was a done deal. And – at least according to the people that voted to leave. But then since then, the drip of information about Russian interference, Cambridge Analytica, Steve Bannon, the real takeover. I mean, just even in this last couple of weeks, over £100,000, that's about $160,000, was spent on Facebook advertising to support from Russia and others the idea that Brexit must happen. Because
Gee, that sounds familiar. That sounds very familiar. So is there any talk now? So Theresa May has been trying to work out a Brexit deal, a way to extricate the UK from the rest of the European Union, and has been unable to get the people of the UK to go along with it. Is she going to keep trying, or is this something that you start over from scratch and have a new referendum on? Or, I mean, what's the way forward from here?
Well, this is the problem. I mean, there was such supreme arrogance by May throughout the whole thing. I mean, if you think about a loss of such epic proportions, no government has ever lost by 230 votes and lost so many of their own members.
Wow.
Usually, the very British thing to do in that moment is to resign, to have the government completely resign, and you start over from scratch. And it was very interesting, you know, Macron added it at the end of his statement. He said, you know, it's interesting about the time we're living in, about what referendums can create. He said it was manipulated from the outside by a lot of what we call fake news. And now they're being told, figure it out yourselves.
Wow.
And the result is it's not true. The Leave campaign lied to the people. And what they've chosen is not possible. So good luck to the representatives of Britain who have to implement a thing which doesn't exist and explain to the people who you have voted on a thing that we lied to you. And I think that's the fundamental issue that no one is talking about. And it took Macron to actually say that. I mean, we had some very high drama in Westminster tonight. I mean, we had Tom Watson. He's the Adam Schiff of our parliament. Okay.
Okay.
3 years ago, he destroyed Rupert Murdoch on the stand regarding press freedoms and the excesses of his tabloid. You might remember seeing a news item where it was a very famous hearing where someone with a paint bomb attacked Murdoch and his then wife, Wendy Deng, jumped up to help tackle the assailant.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So this is guy who methodically tore apart Murdoch. Now, after the vote, methodically tore Theresa May apart. He said, you know, I'm not one of those people who questioned her motives. I agree, you know, with several who said she was motivated by duty. I don't doubt she has a sincere attempt to fulfill a task.
The other kind of duty.
But
she's motivated by
shit.
She
failed. And I'm afraid the failure is hers and hers alone. So, and he's been – they talked about these and it was just very interesting the way he framed it in such a way that there was no bombast. There was no craziness, which has been kind of the signature of the day. You know, she's prime minister without a majority for a flagship policy with no authority and no plan B. And he said, Mr. Speaker, that's not a mere flesh wound from Monty Python fame.
Mm-hmm.
No one doubts her determination or her sincerity, which is genuinely an admirable quality, but misapplied, it can be toxic. So,
yeah, I have a solution. I think we should set Theresa May and Donald Trump off on a road into the sunset and never to be heard from again.
I think we should put them on an island somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Vote them off island.
I got it. You know, this is neither here nor there, but I know you get some American television over there. There's a show on the USA Network called Temptation Island. Now, I don't watch those shows, but the daughter of a dear friend of mine is on it. So I feel like I have to watch it. And at least she doesn't come across as slut. We watched it last night as I couldn't sleep. And my daughter and I at about 3 o'clock in the morning watched this episode of Temptation Island. And there's Brittany. At least she's talking about yoga and meditation and spirituality rather than going, I'm going to steal your man. Neither here nor there, but that's what I did in the middle of the night last night. And in some ways, watching that kind of dreck is more or less disturbing than watching, you know, the shit that goes on with these governments. I mean, what's happening here with the shutdown is truly unbelievable. I mean, I think Donald Trump should be thrown in jail for treason. I mean, he's hurting the American people. And it's all at his hand. And I think that's a treasonous act. I know it technically
he's not
probably
alone
isn't
either.
Because there's not a war.
I think the Republicans have long said they don't want to have a government at all.
Yeah.
You know, are just gleeful that it's hurting so many people.
So the whole world, and I picture Vladimir Putin sitting there just giggling into his drink about what's happening both here and in the UK, because I think they had a hand in it.
Sits there and pets his little cat on his lap and goes,
$1 million. Again, what happens next? You guys are in sort of holding pattern?
Good question. I mean, I think, you know, what we're likely to see happen is the third thing that Macron talked about, which is, you know, let's take a little bit more time. So they'll ask for a longer transition period. So instead of March 29th, it'll be sometime in July. Then maybe they'll step up over the European elections in order to find something else. But to be honest, what she should have done last night and what she should have done, you know, almost immediately is resign. Mm. Have the government resign. On her way out the door, withdraw Article 50, which stops this whole shit show, because that's what it is at this point. And then say, okay, you know, Rees-Mogg, who's sitting there, and Gove, who gave a speech tonight as well. These are all people who want to step into her seat, and they don't care whether she's there or not. They all want to be prime minister. You fix it.
And what about is Jeremy Corbyn waiting in the wings, or is he never going to rise to that position?
Well, Jeremy Corbyn is an enigma wrapped in a riddle.
Yeah,
because
I don't
understand him, because his party is very much in favor of remaining. I mean, the vast majority of the members of his party believe very, very strongly that we're better off in the European Union. But he has for years been anti-Europe. And so you have the leader of a party who most of his people are for remaining, who is for leaving. So even if he were to win and become Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, I'm not sure the situation changes at all. And to be honest, if their election was to be held tomorrow, which of the devils are you going to choose? The one you currently have, which, you know, has some merits to some of the things that they've done? Are you going to bring in Labour, which has some merits? Everybody thought that people, even in the last election in 2015, would flock to the Liberals, would flock to the Liberal Democrats. And they got 11 seats out of 650. So there's no clear choice out there. Because the Lib Dems, of whom I was once a member and actually stood for the Welsh Assembly here, you know, they want to win your mind. The Tories don't care. The Labour want to win your heart, but they don't know how. And the only one that's able to make a cogent statement very much in the same format as Trump did to win hearts and minds, whether it's through deceit or whatever, were UKIP. Who are now aligned with the Tories, and their leader, Nigel Farage, is a complete nutter.
Oh, my God.
But everything he said reached and touched people in a way that they said, yeah, wait a minute, I don't like the way it's going. Screw it. Here's my protest vote. But now the problem is, if there was another referendum today, Remain would win by upwards of 12 points. At least that's what the current prediction is. But I'm not sure anybody would show up to vote because they'd be so sick of it.
Now, what if, I mean, could they put the Brexit question on the ballot again, or is it a done deal?
Well, this is what the people's referendum is all about. Mm-hmm. This is what the second referendum. This is why everybody's protesting. You saw thousands of people in Parliament Square last night cheering when the government's proposal for Brexit went down. These are the people who want a second vote, and they've wanted it consistently now for I would say the last 6 months. And wow. It's been a big campaign. It was happening when Trump was here with the baby balloon flying in the sky. They very much want to stay a part of the European Union, as do we all. I mean, it's mostly the old people. Does this sound familiar, Nicole?
Yep.
That voted to leave.
Yes.
It's mostly the people who don't have a financial impact. You know, my son is in university. When he comes out of university, it'd be really nice for him to be able to work in 28 nations around the European Union. Now, he's blessed that he has a Dutch passport and an American passport, so he can do pretty much whatever he wants, wherever he wants to go. But for the vast majority of children here, they're going to be limited to life on a tiny island, and most of them want to get the hell out of here.
Yeah, tell me about it. I'm in a big country, and right now I'd like to get the hell out of here. Dennis Campbell, but follow Dennis on Twitter at it's a different Twitter handle. Hold on, it is Client Loyalty DC. Client Loyalty DC, and you can find UK Progressive Magazine at ukprogressive.co.uk. Dennis Campbell, wish you the best of luck. To us too.
You too. Yes. It sounds like it's going to be interesting times, and keep the faith.
Yeah,
there's a light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not always an oncoming train.
Okay. Well, I'll keep that in mind. Thank you so much, Dennis. Take
care.
Have
a good night.
And good luck. Ay-ay-ay. All right. Coming up today, in case you did not know, today is Religious Freedom Day. I know you're overwhelmed. And what I wonder is, does that include freedom from religion? If the people in charge of Religious Freedom Day had their way, no, it would not include that at all. In fact, Religious Freedom Day has been in effect for, I don't know, about 20 years or so. Donald Trump just made the proclamation surrounding Religious Freedom Day even more Christian. We'll talk to Frederick Clarkson next. So don't go away. First, we'll check in for what's news. Okay? Okay. It's Nicole Sandler at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings for Attorney General nominee Bill Barr began on Tuesday and continue Wednesday.
William Barr came to his confirmation hearing with one mission: make it clear he will not interfere with Robert Mueller's investigation.
Do you believe Mr. Mueller would be involved in a witch hunt against anybody?
I don't believe Mr. Mueller would be involved in a witch hunt.
Barr was asked what he would do if the president directed him to fire Mueller.
Assuming there was no good cause?
Assuming no good cause.
I would not carry out that instruction.
He assures senators from both parties that he'll make Mueller's conclusions public.
I am going to make as much information available as I can, consistent with the rules and regulations that are part of the special counsel regulations.
Barr defended a memo he wrote in June that attacked Mueller and called fatally misconceived the idea that a president can be charged with obstructing justice for firing his own FBI director. And Barr said at this point in his life, when he planned on retirement, he won't be afraid to do what's right.
And I will not be bullied into doing anything I think is wrong by anybody, whether it be editorial boards or Congress or the president.
Although Barr sounded all the right notes in his opening statement, things got a bit more dicey once he began answering actual questions. After we learned all about the emoluments clause of the Constitution over the past 2 years, it was kind of a shock to hear that the man in line to be the chief law enforcement officer of the land has no clue what it is.
Including the emoluments clause of the Constitution.
Well, I think there's a dispute as to what the emoluments clause relates to. I have not personally researched the emoluments clause. I can't even tell you what it says at this point. Off the top of my head, I would have said, well, emoluments are essentially a stipend attached to some office. But I don't know if that's correct or not.
It's not. Another horrifying moment came during the long pregnant pause before Barr's terrifying answer to this question from Senator Amy Klobuchar.
We obviously have the tragic case of a journalist who worked right here at the Washington Post, Jamal Khashoggi. So I want to ask you something I ask Attorney General Sessions. If you're confirmed, will the Justice Department jail reporters for doing their jobs?
Wow.
I think that, I know there are guidelines in place, And I can conceive of situations where, you know, as a last resort, and where a news organization
has
gone through a red flag or something like that, knows that they're putting out stuff that will hurt the country. There might be a there could be a situation where someone would be held in contempt. But
Attorney General Sessions had said he was going to look at potentially changing those rules at one point. So I'd like you to maybe respond in writing to this.
And despite his assurances earlier in the hearing that he'd be, quote, transparent with Mueller's final report, Barr was singing a different song while answering questions from Senator Blumenthal.
Are you saying, for example, that if information is deleted, that would be like for classification purposes, I would identify that and things like that? I have to say that the rules, I don't know what kind of report is being prepared. I have no idea. And I have no idea what Acting Attorney General Rosenstein has discussed with Special Counsel Mueller. If I'm confirmed, I'm going to go in and see what game plan they have in mind.
It's still only January 2019, but the Democratic presidential hopeful field is expanding. It began last week with Julian Castro's announcement that he's forming an exploratory committee, followed by Elizabeth Warren, Tulsi Gabbard, former Maryland Representative John Delaney, and former West Virginia State Senator Richard Ojeda. And then there were six. In an appearance Tuesday night on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, Kirsten Gillibrand said she was forming an exploratory committee to raise money and travel the country for her presidential run. For a Republican Party who's put up with their leader's regular racism and vulgarity, they sure are bent out of shape over one of their members displaying the same types of behaviors he's been displaying for years. But apparently Steve King's racism got to be too much for the House, who overwhelmingly voted to reject white nationalism and white supremacy, passed 424-1. With Bobby Rush of Illinois being the lone no vote because he said it didn't go far enough. And yes, if you're counting, Steve King actually voted yes. Go figure. Misery loves company. As bad as things are over here in the U.S. with a shuttered government and megalomaniacal narcissist in the White House, Great Britain is also having troubles. Prime Minister Theresa May's Brexit deal came up for a vote on Tuesday and was trounced, losing by 230 votes, the biggest defeat for any U.K. government in the modern parliamentary era. And finally, Wednesday marks day 26 of the government shutdown with no end in sight. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate.
This is a huge, huge issue.
And we're talking about it. The Nicole Sandler Show on Progressive Voices and NicoleSandler.com.
Okay. Hey, happy Religious Freedom Day. Yay. You would think with a name like that, it's for all people to be free to practice whatever religion they want or to practice no religion at all. In fact, that's sort of the way this country was supposed to be founded. Joining us today is Frederick Clarkson. He's been a guest on this program before. He's a senior research analyst at Political Research Associates, a progressive think tank that studies anti-democratic religious and political movements. He's written about politics and religion for more than three decades. He's appeared in Mother Jones, Church and State, Ms. Magazine, Salon. It goes on and on. This past year, he published a series of expose articles about a Christian right state legislative campaign called Project Blitz. Now, I want you to remember that name because today, being Religious Freedom Day, civil rights activists are using today as a moment to mount an attack against Project Blitz. Frederick Clarkson wrote about this. I've got a couple of articles that I'll link to from my blog at NicoleSandler.com. But he was also featured in a piece in The Guardian yesterday that tells about a group of bills titled In God We Trust that are part of Project Blitz, a political playbook that aims to support and promote Christian beliefs. So first of all, Fred, thanks so much for being here. I always appreciate your input.
Oh, thanks for having me. Happy Religious Freedom Day.
Well, happy Religious Freedom Day to you, too, except I say this a lot, and I sort of say it in jest, but I mean it. As an atheist Jew, which is how I define myself, I'm Jewish heritage, but I'm an atheist, I'm more, quote, yeah, I know. I'm more Christian than many of these people who wear their, you know, Christianity on their sleeves. They claim to be Christian, but their practices, their actions are anything but Christ-like. They seem to be more hateful and discriminatory than were the teachings of Christ. Anyway, what is Religious Freedom Day all about? How did this day begin?
Well, it began as an act of Congress to commemorate the 18th century passage of the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom, written by Thomas Jefferson, mm-hmm. shepherded through the legislature by James Madison. And it was really the first, legislation ever to declare religious freedom in the sense that we usually mean it, the way that you just said at the opening, Nicole, and that is that people can believe what they will or not. And here's the key piece, and it would not affect your status as a citizen. It would be neither an advantage or a disadvantage. And in that way, it's like one of the most revolutionary and liberatory ideas in the history of the world. And that's what Madison was up to. You know, the year before, he went to Philadelphia to be the main author of the Constitution, and 2 years before, he became the principal author of the First Amendment. So the significance of the Virginia Statute has been recognized by historians and the Supreme Court as the very definition of what we mean when we say religious freedom.
Okay, so this, the official day, we have other religious days that in a country that prides itself on its formation being on the basis of separation of church and state and freedom to practice whatever religion you want or no religion at all, this is, well, somewhat hypocritical. This was a law passed in 1992, so was that Bill Clinton?
Actually, it was, it was the last act of George Bush, but,
okay.
But it was not hypocritical at all, because Religious Freedom Day is not about religion. It neither promotes nor opposes religion in any form whatsoever. Religious freedom just happens to be the term that they used at the time to talk about what they meant.
So
when we say in the First Amendment, you have freedom of religion, that's basically freedom to think as you want, to believe as you want, free from, right,
mm-hmm.
powerful religious institutions like churches and the government. It's up to you and me to decide for ourselves what we think, not just about the cosmos and God and things like that, but whatever. Without that freedom of thought, there's no freedom of speech,
mm-hmm.
and there's no freedom of the press.
So I guess that held up from 1992 until last year, reading from this Guardian article. Last year, Donald Trump, heavily influenced by Christian evangelicals, used his proclamation to advance a Christian nationalist message that religious freedom was under threat from courts and legislatures, quote, forcing people to comply with laws that violate their core religious beliefs. I guess that's where the hypocrisy comes in?
Well, that's where Donald Trump hijacking all that's good, you know,
gotcha.
Comes in. In most of the previous presidential proclamations, which is really all the Congressional Act required, the president declares, you know, Religious Freedom Day once a year. And that's fine, so we can commemorate all the good things. But Donald Trump hijacked mm-hmm. it to promote his agenda, which happens to be the agenda of his base.
Yeah, because he's such a religious man. He's such a man of God.
Well, you know, you got to dance with the ones that brung you.
I guess.
Terry Goldwater once said.
I guess. Now, that's a topic for another show, which is why the evangelicals are so behind him. And I guess it's all about the rapture, right? People like me are supposed to go back to Israel so they can be raptured up to the heavens and live forever.
Oh, no. Well, there's actually a short answer.
Oh.
There's long answers. But the short answer is this. The Christian right, you know, learned the lessons of politics, and that is you're not going to get a pure candidate. You're not going to get somebody who believes like you do and acts like you do, or at least as you prefer.
Mm-hmm.
They saw in Trump a transactional politician who was going to deliver, and he did. But they had to come up with a theological justification. It's basically this. In the Old Testament, there are any number of characters who are not godly men, but they carried out what was seen to be God's purposes. Uh-huh. Most famous of them being King Cyrus of Babylon, who freed Jews, who helped to build the temple in Jerusalem. And so it is said that Donald Trump has the Cyrus anointing. People should Google this and look this up, because I'm not kidding.
Okay. I believe you. So okay. Now, you were credited in that Guardian article as being the first to draw attention to something called Project Blitz last year. So this, and this is tied into Religious Freedom Day somehow. What is Project Blitz?
Well, Project Blitz is a package of model legislation, and it's basically a Christian right state legislative agenda. And one of the bills is, as you mentioned, a bill for posting in God We Trust in public schools and buildings, but also there's a model resolution for Religious Freedom Day. And it goes through the elements of what you might include in a Religious Freedom Day proclamation, if you were of their mindset. But basically, it doesn't say anything about what the Virginia statute actually is about, what you and I were discussing a minute ago. And that's the idea of religious equality under the law and having it be irrelevant to your status as a citizen. So seeing that, you know, we went forward and said, well, let's create a commemoration for Religious Freedom Day that says what it's actually about, that undercuts their Christian nationalist narrative and teaches us once again how to reclaim what religious freedom really means in our history. And it's been introduced in a few places, and this is just the beginning of what's going to be a national campaign of introducing similar kinds of resolutions around the country.
So I know, again, we're speaking with Fred Clarkson from the Political Research Associates, but there are a number of groups working on this. I know Barry Lynn of Americans United for Separation of Church and State has been on this program many times over the years, and they do amazing work. There's the Freedom From Religion Foundation. There's a few of them. Are you working with these other groups? Is there like a coalition joined together to push back against this stuff?
Oh, absolutely. And the Guardian article talks about the role of Barry Lynn's successor, Rachel Lazar, who recognized immediately what Project Blitz was all about after I wrote about it. And she and I have talked, and she's making it a priority for Americans United going forward to really explain what Project Blitz is about, not just in the particulars of the stylized legislation, but also the wider Christian nationalist vision that they really want to implement. So, yeah, everybody from the American Atheists to the Interfaith Alliance to the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, lots of groups are very concerned and in conversation about what we can do together to thwart this.
Good. Well, so today, again, is Religious Freedom Day. There's also the National Prayer Breakfast that happens every year. Are those two somehow related?
Unrelated. The National Prayer Breakfast is a... We should talk about that sometime.
Yes, but well...
That's sponsored by a shadowy group called The Family.
Yes.
That's conservative Christians that have been manipulating American politics behind the scenes for a long time.
Right. And Jeff Charlotte wrote the book on The Family. And one thing a lot of people don't realize is that Hillary Clinton is a member of The Family. Those are her peeps.
Well, she's not exactly a member.
No?
She's sort of an associate. Yeah, she was part of a family-connected prayer group when she was First Lady. But they're just like a lot of things. Sometimes you're kind of associated because you kind of have to be, and some people are members. But Charlotte says she's definitely not a member.
Okay. Well, back to Religious Freedom Day. The Trump administration and the Republicans at large generally use that term, religious freedom, to push through some of their really reprehensible legislation. For instance, although they're trying to totally kill the Affordable Care Act, they haven't been successful yet, but they've been using it to push back on the requirement that oral contraceptives are included in the coverage. They tried to do away with that, but if I recall correctly, I read something this week where a judge overturned that, and now birth control is included. But these are the kind of things that the Republicans are trying to kill in the name of religious freedom, right?
Well, that's right. Religious freedom has come to be the wrapping on the agenda. It's a way of selling the old agenda, but calling it an act of religious freedom. So that's been a very smart bit of packaging, and it's part of the hijacking of the idea of religious freedom I've been talking about earlier. So if you can, in the case of the banning of contraceptions in insurance packages, and that was the Supreme Court, the Hobby Lobby case, preferring one religious point of view over another,
mm-hmm.
right, which is exactly what the Constitution and the First Amendment are supposed to prescribe. So we're at a time in our history where the court, and now the Trumpist court, is tilting in the direction of, you know, elevating in a religious supremacist idea certain preferred Christian groups over everybody else. So we're at a very pivotal moment in our history, and that's why, you know, so many of us are concerned about reclaiming the idea of religious freedom as the liberatory idea that it really is, as opposed to a disguise for the agenda of the Catholic bishops and conservative evangelicals.
Right. Well, that's why, you know, I'm reading these pieces, the ones that you wrote and the Guardian piece, and it's, as I said before, it's really disconcerting because I didn't know that this Project Blitz playbook was in effect. And it's written here, opponents have tracked at least 75 bills brought forward in more than 20 states since Trump became president, which stem from the Project Blitz playbook. And again, part of that, the first category they write is the In God We Trust bills that are likely to trigger opposition by saying the bills are a waste of time, or the sponsor of the bill just wants to fight culture wars and divide people. It seems like that's what these are all about, the whole Hobby Lobby thing. It seems like the corporate media doesn't report a whole lot on it, because I didn't even know that this was a thing happening.
No, the corporate media mostly hasn't. There was a very good op-ed about this stuff in the New York Times by Catherine Stewart and Religion News Service, which is mostly picked up by mainstream newspapers, did do good pieces, but it kind of stopped right there. And aggressive reporting by TV and radio and traditional news media just has not happened.
And so why not? I mean, is it just like, I know if I say to somebody, somebody says, what are you going to talk about on the show today? If I say religion, it's kind of like, really? Because I'm it's not a topic that I usually venture into. And again, I've said this before, my entire religious education came from watching the movie The Ten Commandments on television. So, you know, on Hanukkah, we'd each pick a color candle and bet on whose would burn down the fastest. So it wasn't exactly your traditional religious training in my house and upbringing. It still pisses me off when I hear Trump and his acolytes talk about the fact that the United States was built on a foundation of being a Christian nation. That right there seems to be at the crux of the problem. As long as they keep insisting, as they do in Opposite World, they make stuff up, that this was founded as a Christian nation, we have a problem with history, don't we?
Well, we do. It's a way of justifying their contemporary political agenda by invoking that, well, this is really the original intentions of God and the Founding Fathers. It's a very clever formula, but it's a lie. And in fact, that's one of the things that's so helpful about the history of the Virginia Statute, because, you know, very casual reading, you soon discover, oh, well, you know, they decided not to include any reference of Christianity in their legislation whatsoever. In fact, they were going to overthrow the Anglican Church, which had been used as a tool of oppression by the British monarch. So they want, and it was the Baptists and the Evangelical Baptists and the Evangelical Presbyterians who were Jefferson's allies in creating this culture of religious equality. It takes you about 5 minutes to understand that and blow up the idea that America was founded as a Christian
nation. Sure.
In fact, they specifically rejected that.
Right, but they still push it, and you have Franklin Graham and the other megachurch people. Getting behind Donald Trump because he's fulfilling their goals, which are getting anti-abortion justices on the Supreme Court. I guess that's their number one priority.
Yeah, that's part of it. But it's also creating exemptions in the law so that people don't have to recognize gay marriages or provide, you know, services and public accommodations to gay people or other people they don't like. There's a real rolling back of the entire ethos of equality of the civil rights era that's going on here. It's, you know, being eroded. And that's the wider agenda. You see that very clearly in the Project Blitz playbook, mm-hmm. but you also see in the general policies of the Trump administration. He said he would deliver for the Christian
yep.
right, and he is. It is.
Even though it's inconceivable to most of us how the Christian right can get in bed with him because he is so antithetical to everything they allegedly stand for.
Well, true in terms of his personal capacities, but that's why he's a King Cyrus, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's an ungodly
mm-hmm.
man. He's carrying out their idea of God's purposes. As soon as he set aside the idea that you need somebody who's a conservative Christian to deliver for them, you understand Donald Trump.
Right. So we've learned about groups like ALEC, for instance, the American Legislative Exchange Committee, I think it's what ALEC stands for, who is a group of state governmental committees who share model legislation that's prohibitive, that takes rights from people, and they share this around the country to the point where some, you know, state legislatures even have introduced this model legislation without changing the names, just putting forth what they've been handed by the lobbyists. And that seems to be what this Project Blitz is. It's like a pooling of these right-wing Christian religious resources. We talked about the first category of these In God We Trust bills to fight culture wars. The Guardian article goes on to say Category 2 include bills for a range of proclamations or resolutions declaring a religious freedom day, hello, or Christian Heritage Week that can then be used to get religious teaching into schools, which is kind of dangerous, but also behind the push against public schools. And then it says Category 3 bills will have the greatest impact but will be the most hotly contested. They include resolutions in favor of, quote, biblical values concerning marriage and sexuality, such as establishing public policy favoring adoption by intact heterosexual marriage-based families and establishing public policy favoring intimate sexual relations only between married heterosexual couples. This is now really dangerous territory.
And some of that legislation has actually been passed.
Wow.
I believe in Kansas and Nebraska last year, if I'm not mistaken, and introduced elsewhere on the, preferring heterosexuality as a matter of public policy. That was introduced in Georgia, and I think it'll be reintroduced again this year. So, yeah, these things are, a part of the conversation. They're not always, the boilerplate that's introduced because, different states have different or different places in terms of their legal code. So they have to adapt the model sometimes
mm-hmm.
to a situation and also looking at it pragmatically in terms of what's politically possible. But this is the starting place. Sometimes you see the whole thing. Sometimes you see it adaptations. But, it's an active part of the public policy conversation in state legislatures all over the United States.
Wow. And so I guess the first step in combating it is admitting we have a problem, right? Talking
yeah.
about it. And too many people don't talk about it. Again, it's religion is one of those taboo topics. We talk about politics because that's the general pastime these days. But it seems like people are still generally loath to discuss religion because, you're going to offend someone? When public figures, elected officials, government agencies start using religion as a way to suppress the will of the people, there's a problem here in the United States when that's constitutionally against the law, and we need to stand up against it, and that's what you're doing here, right?
Well, that's right, and I will say that people that are, policy wonks or know people who are, the entire Project Blitz playbook is, I think it's embedded in the Guardian article, but it's certainly in my articles, last year's and this year's,
mm-hmm.
all 140 pages of it. So
wow.
If you want to see what their thinking really is, in the details as well as the bigger vision, it's like right there.
Great. You also have a couple of books, Dispatches from the Religious Left, The Future of Faith and Politics in America, and Eternal Hostility, The Struggle Between Theocracy and Democracy. Again, we can follow Fred Clarkson on Twitter, at Fred Clarkson, and you can find, I'll put links to these articles we discussed, the one in the Guardian and the one you wrote as well, on my blog at NicoleSandler.com. Fred, thank you so much. I really appreciate you doing this work because it's so important. And again, as I said, not enough people are really talking about the danger here.
Well, thanks, Nicole. We'll see what we can do about getting people thinking and talking about it.
Terrific. Thanks again. You take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Frederick Clarkson. I keep wanting to call him Carlson for some reason, but that's not it. All right, with that, go off and have a beer and a prayer. Or not. Thoughts and prayers, you know, catchphrase of the O's or the teens. Tomorrow is Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. We'll have the latest on what's going on, the shutdown. I know it's so frustrating, but we'll try to bring you the facts. Friday, by the way, we'll chat with Will Bunch and my old friend Kelly Carlin will be here. Yes, George's daughter. Because remember the production piece I made up a few weeks ago using George Carlin's 7 dirty words? Before I put it out there, I wanted to clear it with Kelly and make sure she was cool with it. She loved it. But she told me about something that she's working on now. She's, well, I'll let her explain what she does these days. She helps us through these tough times that we're living. hey, any way to get some help these days, I'm all for it. All right, with that, we're done for the day. Thank you for listening. As always, I will see you tomorrow right here. Bye, everyone.